Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the show. A couple of months ago, I had the privilege of speaking at a conference for a company called Quest Analytics. Not Quest Diagnostics, different company. Quest Analytics. And how best to describe what they do? They're kind of an urban planning healthcare platform that goes to communities in advance of setting up healthcare systems that meet the needs of the community. A little complicated, but a good example is if it's a low-income community or a Spanish-speaking community, they make sure that the infrastructure is set up to work with the culture of that area. It's more complicated than that, but joining me today is their CEO, Steve Levin, who I got to meet at that conference that I spoke at, live in studio. He's a really smart guy, and he's going to explain some of the good parts of healthcare. And yes, there are good parts of healthcare where if they don't do their job, they don't get paid. How wonderful. So buckle in. Here we go. Steve Levin. Enjoy the show. Steve Levin.
There I am.
Welcome to Out of Patience.
Happy to be here.
Long time coming.
Thank you.
My first question is only Harvard and Yale?
Harvard and Dartmouth. Yale's always a company.
I ruined it. New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Right? Hanover and Boston. That's right. Yale was always sort of a family ambition, but we never got there.
Okay. Your parents must be very disappointed.
Well, they're finally happy now. We actually have a doctorate in the making in the family.
Oh, really? Who's that?
My youngest son just started at Columbia. We're pretty excited about that.
Good for him. What kind of doctor?
One that helps people.
Okay. That's a good doctor.
Yeah. He doesn't know yet, but it's been great. We're very excited.
Is he your only?
No, we got two. I got another one. He's not a doctor.
Yeah, my twins are 13, and we clearly know which one's going to do this and which one's going to do that and which one's not going to do this.
Yeah. So, no, it's great. And it's someone who's been in healthcare for over 2 decades to have somebody finally in sort of delivery and clinical engagement is pretty interesting and eye-opening and cathartic.
So I always ask executives in the business for a long time, did you ever work retail in high school?
I was a busboy. I was a waiter for many years. I was a stock keeper in different times. So I haven't actually worked retail, but I've done other things.
I was a busboy.
Oh, yeah. Only the best.
Did you have the little crummer and you crumb the tables too?
My restaurant was not quite that high end. Okay. Mine was more like, can you pick up the chicken fingers under the table, please?
Got it. My dad sort of pulled a nepotism thing when I was 15 and got me a job as a busboy at Staten Island Country Club.
Ooh.
Which was, fancy golf
That's
thing.
Fancy.
And it was nice. And, they had like the napkins that you folded like swans and no one knew what was behind the swinging doors. And everything was, humble beginnings, right?
Yeah. No, look, I learned a lot, cleaning up after people's dinner, serving them, working in the kitchen and the people that had been there for years. And, I was a summer employee, so it was interesting. Learned a lot about me and learned a lot about others. And
yeah, people skills.
People skills.
Tolerance.
People, not just tolerance, just sort of effort. And, it's where I sort of have come to the belief that everybody, again, millions of people in the world, billions of people in the world. And so no such thing as an average and, no rule fits everybody. But
right.
I, generally speaking, think people are pretty good.
Is that Machiavelli? Man is inherently good or evil? I forget which one.
Probably one of those. I like to think of that everybody is well-intentioned. They're trying to do their best in their context and sort of work to their better interest.
I was a fan of, I think I wrote maybe a paper on this, on how life is a bell curve meets Plinko from Price is Right. You can never really know what's going on.
Right. The Price is Right. That is a moment in time. And Bob Barker, right?
Oh, yeah. As of this taping, Rip R. Barker.
Yeah. No, so
that was a legacy that kids today don't appreciate.
And sort of how many times did you scream at the people in the final show, the final bid, and like, right. Oh, that's way too low.
The showcase showdown.
The showcase showdown.
And you know, you're probably in a space where like, well, how much is that? It's $5. $5.01.
Right.
Everyone knows.
And you always knew you wanted the second showcase.
Yes.
You never wanted the first one.
No, the first one was like the furniture no one wants. And
right.
The second one was the car.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Always. Second one was better.
Remember on Wheel of Fortune where you're like, in the original Wheel of Fortunes, like they gave you the money, like the rotator.
You had to go shopping.
Yeah, you went the thing rotated. There. I'll take the knife and the blender. And the bear rug.
And how much do I have left?
Right.
I'll have that on gift certificate.
On gift certificate to service merchandise.
Right. That show is still on. It still amazes me.
Yeah.
It's still Pat and Vanna, but they've simplified it, right? We just hand out money now.
Yeah. I've been doing the New York Times crossword puzzle since I was in high school. And on the app, if you have the New York Times crossword puzzle app, it goes back to 1993. All the puzzle, single one from 93 onward. And, you know, the Monday puzzles back then were as hard as the Friday puzzles they are today. So they've dumbed down the New York Times crossword puzzle.
So there you go.
There you go.
Anyway, we digress.
The over-under. So I wanted to talk about how you leaped directly into like the business world right out of school. Is that what you wanted to do, or did it just happen that way? Or talk us through that.
It didn't just happen that way. I was sort of an engineer. I was not really a very good engineer. So engineers who are listening are like, yeah, you're not. I was a Bachelor of Arts in Engineering, which means I sort of I understand the math. I sort of can do the conceptual stuff, but you don't actually want me to build anything or fix anything or design anything. But I just like the math and the structure of it all. But I always sort of thought I was going to go towards business and sort of something like that. I grew up in a family had run a small business, and so I sort of had that in the upbringing. I think people learn from their parents and their communities.
Well, I have a BA in music.
There you go.
So the BA rings true for me, and I feel like all the skills I built in 25 years have nothing to do with what I learned, and it's all trial by fire, right?
Yeah. Look, I just, you know, I ended up in business because I liked problem solving. I thought it was sort of interesting and sort of and became a consultant, which means if you give me your watch, I'll tell you what time it is.
Right.
But I just, smart people who, in hard problems and people who were looking for things to be constructed and structured and designed and sort of fit my head.
So what were the specific issues of the 90s that you were working on that probably may not matter today?
Some of them are, you know, a lot of them, they endure. So I spent some time in the steel industry in the U.S. thinking about foreign import and sort of the technology shifts that were occurring. So blast furnaces to continuous cast steel and sort of what was going to happen to auto steel. And so the idea of technology and disruption was a pretty common conversation. And we were at the forefront of what was going to be a globalized industry. And then so the issues are – the context may be different, right? It wasn't digital. It was analog. But sort of the issues were similar.
Tell me you had Lotus Notes.
Oh. At one point I remember we had a model. We were trying to build an Excel spreadsheet model that was so big. We needed to get an even bigger PC, so we had to wait for the Compaq to come out.
We had the 586, not the 486.
Exactly. And, you know, traveling around America with floppy disks. Mm-hmm. How many of, you know, fax paper? Is it the waxy fax paper?
The smelly fax paper or the paper wax paper?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that journey was and payphones in airports. So we flew around, right? So a calling card you had and a payphone. It'd be a line of the wall of payphones and people waiting to get on and doing voicemail.
Yeah.
557. That means advance to the end and delete.
Can you imagine COVID back in the payphone era?
Just right?
No one wins,
right? But you know, I'm an old guy, so you know, faxes, payphones, calling cards. Dial up,
yeah,
right, yeah, that one. Who's gonna want? Why would I want to get internet at home? It's so slow. It's faster to go to the library.
Like downloading like by pixel on your screen.
Right. I was somebody on the radio recently was telling the story of how they used to take pictures and download them, and they'd print them, and it'd be like.
Yeah, dot matrix for the win. Yeah. Print shop.
Right. Yeah. And you know, 22 minutes later, they got a picture of them on the school fence.
Yep. So my consummate 90s old school pre-tech story is that I was my first MRI was done on day X, and my mom and I went out to lunch afterwards, and we got home and the answering machine was blinking. And that's how we knew to go back and see the radiologist.
Right, I remember that. Yeah.
Answering when he was blinking. Old school.
Old school.
And now my kids today are like, oh, Dad, the floppy disk is the save icon. You notice that?
Have your kids tried a typewriter?
Not a typewriter, no.
Have you tried to dial on a rotary phone?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
In the last year or two.
Oh, no. No, I need to do that.
You should try it. You will fumble mightily.
Will the arthritis kick in immediately? But that was when people, we hated their phone numbers if they had too many nines in them.
Yeah, well, I tried this in a bizarre way recently, and I couldn't actually dial properly.
Really?
It's so slow.
Right.
And mechanistic.
Yes.
That you're going to discover like 1, 3, 1, 2, 8, and it's going to slip. And it's really hard.
My phone number growing up was 984-7176. A lot of heavy numbers over 5. No one liked dialing my number.
Right. And then – exactly. And how many phones had cords, right? Did you grow up with the wall phone that had the long cord?
We had the yellow rotary phone, and the cord was about 50 feet long and tangled, but it reached upstairs to my bedroom.
That was the one.
Which I think, you'd walk through and you'd just like collapse when you didn't see it and you fall on the floor.
Right. So now we've just certified to everyone listening that we are old.
We are old.
Right.
It's like there was an Instagram shot of like Joe and Natalie and Tootie from Facts of Life, and they were like 65 years old. And they said, if you know who these people are, you have arthritis.
Yeah, I'm not going there. I don't ever want to look at anything other than in the original form.
Yeah. What's your astrological sign?
I'm a Virgo.
Okay. Do you fit the Virgo profile?
I don't know what is that?
Virgos, I'm reading from the internet, folks, the internet. Virgos are logical, practical, and systematic in their approach to life. The earth sign is a perfectionist at heart and isn't afraid to improve skills through diligent and consistent practice.
So far, it's pretty good.
That's like your poster.
So far, it's pretty good, right?
Pretty accurate, universe. Right. Thank you very much.
Right? That's pretty good.
So you're
what are the shortcomings?
So Virgo's biggest weakness, again, according to the interweb, is the desire to reach perfection.
I'm a person that doesn't fit me. I'm more of a, I should know where I'm trying to go, but like, don't let perfection get in the way of progress.
Yeah. Virgos invest too much time and energy in focusing on minor details that they can't get into mainframe or bigger picture. Not you.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, you're Virgo-ish.
I can be annoying.
That's fantastic. So why healthcare? Right, you meandered across this.
I didn't start here. I fell into this. I was doing steel and aluminum and other things, consumer product stuff, and ended up having some of the work I was doing around consumer marketing and segmentation had relevance in a healthcare context. So things around targeting and optimizing sort of how to think about workflow, so segmentation. And somebody asked me to do a little work to take this sort of intellectual concept and apply it in healthcare. And that was the beginning. So I leave, they call me and they're like, you could be interesting on this problem and are you interested in it? And so it was interesting enough that I said, sure, why not? And so I left the consulting gig and I started this other company, which was around data analytics for the financial systems inside of health systems.
That sounds ahead of its time.
It was early. We were absolutely at the front edge of the world of thinking about, you know, analytics and consumer engagement and how to use data, big data, and all that sort of good stuff. So yeah, this was like kind of 2007, 2008, which is a long time ago, although yes. It seems like yesterday.
In a sense, yes.
In a sense. But yeah, so we were probably 5-7 years ahead of our time in healthcare. We were 20 years late compared to consumer credit,
right?
Compared to finance, compared to marketing. But in healthcare, we were early.
It harkens back. I was plucked out of the ether by Google Health in its first ideation.
Yeah.
A gentleman named Adam Bosworth.
Yep.
You know, Adam. And I was like, why am I here? But they wanted like patients. There was like three other patients, you know, leader patients, not like plucked off the street people. And it was fascinating to see how it failed because there was a lot of assumptiveness that, oh, people trust Google. No. And now they're like under antitrust laws at this point.
I'm not close enough to the Google story. Healthcare is really hard.
Yes.
It's big and it's hard and it's personal.
Yeah.
It's very easy to kind of read a newspaper article. For me, like I always read a newspaper article or read a newspaper in the news, and I separate the sort of the story from like there's a level which is at the social level, like, oh my God, how could this happen for millions of people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the part of me which is like, if I was one of them, if that was my kid or my brother or our next door neighbor or our town, and healthcare is really complicated that way because all the statements are about millions and millions of people and trillions of dollars.
Yep.
And then the other side is like, no, it's my son and his broken arm.
Yep. Well, we're going to deconstruct more with Steve Levin, the CEO at Quest Analytics, after the break with these messages from Wegmans? I don't know. Who's the ad this time? All right, we'll be back in a sec.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so we've established that healthcare is messy. I was unaware. But yeah,
no one knew that.
I've been edified.
I'm so smart.
Clearly, you've done a good job. So we discussed before the show, and as of this taping, I'm going through my own personal nonsense with a payer. First time in my career, surprisingly, that I'm dealing with this and not other crazy things.
But your problem is more than just a payer.
No.
Your problem is a system problem. It's
yes.
The way certain choices were made, what it's put the payer – the context the payer's now in.
Right. Like why did they make this decision?
Right.
Can you trace the cord back? Who do you mean – who are you mad
right.
at?
Right. Like who are you mad at? And lots of people in this chain.
I mean I think saying don't hate the player, hate the game is almost too broad of a brush.
I'm not saying you can't hate the player.
Right.
But I'm just saying like it's really complicated.
No, like we're just going to keep going back to it's messy. So in my case, I was denied one of my critical medications that I've been on for a million years now because, again, the system was responding to a formulary agreed to by an employer unbeknownst to my wife, who's my plan. And that decision, as angry as I am about it, wasn't really their fault because they're following the rules of the contract the employer signed.
But it's personal and it's really painful.
Yes.
Life-threateningly painful.
Yes, yes. It's right. Endangering the welfare. It's violating Hippocrates, all these things.
All these things. And do you think that the clinicians want to do that?
Well, that goes back to, you know, these are doctors who take the Hippocratic Oath and they have to follow these best practices. But at the end of the day, if there's harm being done, how do you balance that even though you're following directions?
I think they have to again, I'm a believer that people want to do well. And in the system, look, there's bad actors and there are bad outcomes and there are bad events everywhere. But if I think about 98% of the people, I believe they want to do well. Maybe they don't understand. Maybe they didn't have the information presented to them at the time to make a different decision. Maybe it's too, the system doesn't allow them to make a different decision and they don't know how to ask a different question. But I don't believe any clinician wants to do harm. I don't believe that. Whether I don't believe it or I don't want to believe it, I can't go through life. This is my Virgo thing.
Yeah, you're
right?
Okay.
I'm a Virgo.
Go back to Virgo.
I'm connected together, all back together again. I have to believe that my counterparts want to do well, that they are trying in their heart to help me, especially if they're going to wear a white coat or scrubs, that they're there to help.
And they get just as frustrated as we do as patients.
Absolutely right. And we all watch the TV ads where the drug companies show happy people or the insurance ad where the insurance agent helps. How many times has Captain Chaos ripped down the
right?
Basket, right?
I know.
Right?
I know.
So I don't think any of these organizations want to be malintent. You know, generally speaking.
Well, you said if 99% of people are good actors, 1% of 8 billion is a lot of people.
Right, right. And it's really the system, healthcare is really personal. Your situation is not like anybody else's. And so the process and the rules and the protocols, which are meant to help guide people dealing with thousands of people,
right,
may not have considered your one spot.
Well, that's also the thing. It's personal. It's life and death. But we don't get this upset with cars because, how dare Toyota, jack up their mileage to fool the government?
Sure you do. How many times, do you read the newspaper about Toyota's – I bought the car and they said the dealer told me this and it was really that. Or the car, they've changed the battery cases. I mean, I think everybody just – all products and all services have edge cases.
Yeah.
I just think healthcare, somebody told me a long time ago, healthcare a right or a privilege? And that, is it a mission or a margin?
Right.
And health, because it's life and death, literally life and death, I think on the margin, the friction and the gaps and the problems are just bigger.
It's so different to take the emotion out of it and really look at it as a practical clusterfuck instead of
– Oh, can I swear on this show?
You can say what the hell you want, my friend. Have you heard my show? But that's really what it is. And where you want to balance your take on malevolency against greed and – corporate interests and personal well-being and social justice. It's a mess.
It's really
it's a Jackson
hard.
Pollock painting.
No, it is. But are nonprofits better than for-profits?
Depends. One's a health system, one's a cancer charity.
Same health system.
Yes.
We've got health systems that are all the same.
Yep.
There are some that are for-profit, some are not-for-profit. We've got insurance plans. Some are for-profit, some are not-for-profit. Is one better than the other?
Right.
Not necessarily. When you get into it, it's not the tax structure and it's not the ownership, it's the people and it's their ability to kind of enable and deliver and answer and be empathetic.
Right.
Right.
So what's your take on something like the the No Surprises Act. Because most people don't even know what that means. And there's a lot of communication now for the maybe the awakened patient that, you know, you go to Kroger's or Wegmans, you make sure the orange juice costs what you paid for it. No one knows to do that at their hospital. Is a federal protection a stopgap? Is it put like gum in a leak in the dam? What's your take on this?
There's a lot of what I would think of in this realm. I'm going to broaden it beyond those surprises. So I think that the government at the moment, state, federal, bunch of them are saying, look, we want to make the information more transparent. We want everyone sort of and take the consumer out for a minute because it's going to be a journey towards the consumer.
Right.
But at the moment, the government's saying, look, a lot of this information really matters and it's been trapped. And it's been trapped and siloed and held, you know, and the government's saying, look, we just think it needs to be presented and brought forward, whether it's contracted rates, whether it's who's in network, who's out of network, what procedures would be covered or wouldn't be covered. And so they're not saying what the answer is. They're just saying, look, let's make it visible. And then there's going to be a whole architecture, whether it's Quest or lots of other companies who are going to take this information and sort of structure it and make it useful. And it's going to make it useful for members and consumers. Like,
well, that tees up, you know, going back to what I learned when I spoke at your event, having no understanding of that part of the pool, right?
Right.
My interpretation of what you guys were doing was benevolent in the sense that you identify a market that needs infrastructure and you build infrastructure based on the needs of the market so you can get paid to do the job.
Our simple mission in life at Quest is to help America get access to great healthcare. And we have a simple mission, which is help great health networks be formed, help providers join them. You know, so a network, everyone thinks of a network as a directory, but if I step away from the sort of the thing you interface with,
right?
The network is sort of, it is the providers that are available to serve you. And it's whether they're orthopedists and hospitals or home health and dentists, it's orthopedists, it's whatever. It's all these clinicians that are meant to help you. That's the network. And they're sprinkled all over the geography. They're
right, but you're identifying that in this community, there's this culture, there's that perspective.
We're thinking about
there
like—
there are these politics.
Our simple job is to help people that are organizing insurance plans. Could be a provider, could be an employer, could be an insurance company, could be the government. To say, look, this is the population in that market. This is where they live. This is sort of some of their kind of demographics and sort of context. What is the sort of – what would be a high performing – I use that word. I mean like what would be a compelling healthcare network? Where should I have – and where should I make sure I've got doctor's offices? How far – I don't want to put all the primary care people on the wrong side of the zip code and everyone has to drive 30 miles to get to it. That's not helpful.
Right.
So where do we put them? And do I need people in certain communities that are – people of color, black doctors? Do I need Spanish speakers over here? Do I need to have extra endocrinologists? Make sure I've got more endocrinologists in this market because we've got more diabetes. Like our job is simply to help the people that want to deliver networks and build better access, do it better, meet the needs of America's, Americans. And the network is sort of this interesting shared thing, employers or governments or sponsor them, payers organize them, providers participate in them, and members experience them. It's like the thing on which healthcare is riding. Products ride on top of it, and our health, your health, and my health is in it. And straight networks make a difference.
Your inner Virgo and engineer come in handy because this is almost like a bit of urban planning too.
Oh, it's totally. This is about time and distance and access. And are there train stops nearby or buses? Is everyone have to drive? And there are care deserts in America. There are, like we hear a lot about food deserts.
Right.
There are places in America where there aren't endocrinologists. So are the PCPs delivering it or do we have to go somewhere else? And how, telehealth. So that's another piece. It's digital. Like what is telehealth doing in the world of network design? There are some places where digital engagement, whether it's an internet or telephone, can make a difference. Lots of things that it's hard to do surgery on the internet.
But this also includes like infrastructure, right? Working with like the cable companies or the internet companies, the ISPs.
You have to be, you know, if you're building a network or thinking about those care deserts, you need to be thinking about if I make it telehealth, do these people have high speed internet or not?
Right.
Yeah, there's a real. So the network is sort of a really important thing, much more nuanced and textured than simply a list in a direct, you know, in an online directory that you search. And there's a lot of people that have it. It makes a big difference. It really important.
And I would imagine you're always tinkering with it too, because it changes on a day-to-day basis.
I use the word drift.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of drift in this problem. So there's new doctors coming out every 6 months. They graduate, right? We've got doctors retiring. We've got doctors' offices that merge and relocate, like that, you know, that your pediatrician that used to be down next to the Toys R Us.
Right.
That office closed because they raised their rents.
Hang on, Rip Toys R Us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. That pediatrician that's down next to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yep.
Oh, that's another one. That's gone too.
Pick something relevant.
Container store.
Okay. Done.
We've all got a container store, right? But the pediatrician that's next to the container store, that's not there anymore.
Right.
They moved because the rents got too high because the container store was too lucrative. So now they're around the corner next to, you know, Dave & Buster's. But in the directory, you know, that information needs to be updated. Yesterday they moved. So tomorrow it needs to be changed, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a drift on the providers, you know, 2-3% of the information changes every month. And then there's a drift on the members, like your membership, like the membership that's part of the plan yesterday may be different tomorrow. Maybe there was a marriage. Maybe there was, people joined, like they had an open enrollment period, maybe a new employee. So like all this, I think of it as drift, and both sides are drifting. And so you have to be dynamically keeping the network fresh.
Yeah, it sounds like an extraordinary struggle. But how many years has Quest been around?
North of 20.
Okay, so you probably have most of it down from a relevancy perspective.
You know
what to expect when you're not expecting to what expect?
But look, we're really good at this. And the team that I work with is incredible. They are passionate. They are fixated on the problem of 300 million Americans and helping them get healthcare. And we do an incredible job keeping our clients happy, trying to make this problem, which is quite complicated, easy. But it's a constantly changing problem. So COVID has demonstrated sort of in the delivery challenges and the unevenness of some of our infrastructure, the challenges culturally, so that the problem of what tomorrow's great network looks like is different than the way we thought of it yesterday. We're always getting smarter.
So let's end on something positive.
All right. I'm a positive guy. I don't know if you've noticed
it's that. It's that Virgo part of you. I'm a cockeyed pessimist. Just Gemini.
I can read the newspaper every day. I can listen to the stories and say, oh, isn't that terrible? Or I can look at it and say, here's a chance to get better. Here's an opportunity. Here's where we could go. I fundamentally have to wake up in the morning and believe that that the people I work for, the people that work for me, the people I partner with, the organizations I work with are intending to do well.
Well, on that note, I will agree to agree to disagree to agree.
All right. I'm not sure where I ended up, but I got you. We're good.
That's all good. But I'm so thrilled to have you in the studio finally. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to your community earlier this year. It was a real privilege.
They loved it. Our community was a bunch of folks who are building networks and trying to think about how to oversee networks and ensure that the network meets the public interest. And they are incredibly inquisitive and passionate about hearing how it's working, like what's good and what's bad, what can be changed, and sort of understanding that. They're incredibly passionate, well-intentioned people.
All right. Steve Levin, father of a future doctor.
Hopefully.
CEO of Quest Analytics and former busboy. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Patience, my friend. Be well. All right. Bye, everyone. See you next time.
Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is an Off Script Health production.
The executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. It's mixed and edited by Kyle Moore. If you like the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome. Leave us a message anytime at 855-AUDIO-66. That's 855-AUDIO-66 to share your healthcare shitness with us, and we might just play them on the air on a future episode. For more information about this show and Offscript Health, visit offscript.com. That's offscript, no T, .com.